Day. And welcome to Shattering Myths. On this program, we're going to expose the misconceptions associated with religion and politics, with military and economic schemes. And we have a full plate of news to dive into this morning. But instead of merely presenting it and telling you what has happened, I'm going to try to explain what's going to happen and why. And then during our second hour, we're going to engage God on His terms through His Torah, which means teaching and not law, and by way of His one and only covenant. If you are rational, this will be the best part of today's program. Our number, should you want to engage in this discussion, you would like to criticize or affirm anything I have to say, is 877-300-7645. Our first item in the news comes by way of CNN. The reporter there wasn't smart enough, wasn't intelligent enough, wasn't well enough informed, nor judgmental enough to be able to make any sense of what he was reporting. But nonetheless, he has brought us something from the news that should alarm those who are informed and judgmental. The article reads, Filipino government officials and Muslim rebel leaders, read jihadists, signed a landmark peace deal Monday, aimed at ending a long-running insurgency in the nation's troubled south. Now, we have shared many times on this program that Islam knows nothing of peace, that Islam was conceived in terrorism. If it were not for the onslaught of 75 terrorist raids, all inspired by Muhammad during the first 10 years of the Islamic era, Islam would not exist. It was fed entirely by money and property and individual lives that were seized via terrorism. Islam has one comment in the Quran regarding treaties. It is found in the ninth surah, the second to last, handed down. In that surah, it begins by telling Muslims that a treaty, a peace treaty, any formal agreement between Muslims and non-Muslims is not binding on the Muslim. So here, the Filipino government signed a peace treaty that the Muslims themselves view as non-binding by order of their God. They call that stupid, where I come from. Anyway, the provisional accord, paves the way for a new autonomous region to be administered by Muslims in Mindanao, according to President Aquino III, who met with the rebels at the presidential palace in Manila. You see, all you have to do to be given what you crave is to be violent. If you kill enough people, if you perpetrate enough terrorist acts, if you act violent enough, just for the hope that you will stop being violent, you'll get whatever you want. These Islamic terrorists murdered tens of thousands of people over the last 20 to 25 years, all because they wanted an independent region of the Philippines to be ruled under the savagery of Sharia law. So, what did they do? They, over these past 25 years, have conducted thousands of terrorist raids, killed tens of thousands of people, destroyed property, destroyed hope, kidnapped tens of thousands more and held them for ransom, all in accord with Muhammad's behavior. And how were they rewarded? By the ignorance in the West, they were given exactly what they wanted. This area of the Philippines, Mindanao, will now be governed as an Islamic autonomous region and be under the auspices of Sharia law. It's not unlike what happened with the PLO and Fatah and their relentless terrorism against Israel and the United States, even against Europe, for two decades under the ugly one, Yasser Arafat. And what did they get for all of their killing? They got their own autonomous region We call it today Gaza and the West Bank. And what's the result of that? More killing, more atrocities, more violence. When Yasser Arafat was afforded his autonomous region by Bill Clinton at the during the Oslo Accords, he because it didn't give the ugly one everything that he sought, he turned to Arabic and gave a sermon when he returned to the West Bank, to Ramallah. And what he said is, I have negotiated this in the spirit of Hudabaya. And yet not one American understood what they were talking about, not one European. Why? Because we are ignorant. At Hudabaya, it's the impetus behind the ninth surah that I cited a moment ago. When Muhammad tried to attack and conquer his former hometown, Mecca, with insufficient forces, now mind you, there was no army at Mecca, there wasn't even a police force, there were a bunch of merchants living in mud huts. But when he attempted to do that and felt that he had insufficient terrorists by his side, he instead formed a peace treaty with the Meccans, saying that he would not terrorize them for 10 years. He would no longer kidnap their children for 10 years. He wouldn't rape their women for 10 years, things he had been doing with reckless abandon. And so the following year, when Muhammad was able to get more jihadists, bribing them, saying that, you know, you can have a share of whatever you conquer, that and came down against the mud hut village of Mecca with 10,000 jihadists, mujahideen, under arms, and conquered the place, he had a problem in that he had signed and sworn an oath that he wouldn't do this. So that's how he came up with the ninth surah, saying that an agreement between a Muslim and a non-Muslim is not binding on the Muslim. In other words, don't trust us. This, of course, came from the Islamic God. So Allah is saying, I will lie to you. But everything that I have told you may well be a lie. You ought not trust me, and you ought not trust Muhammad. Anyway, he said that what he had negotiated was in the spirit of Hudabaya, which means it was not binding on the Muslims. But here in the Philippines, some 30 years later, we find the same stupidity. Ignorance isn't bliss. It is deadly. This is her quote, Aquino's quote. Today we sign a framework agreement that can finally seal a genuine lasting peace in Mindanao. No. There will be no peace in Mindanao. They're going to impose the most vicious legal system, the most ruthless, the most perverted legal system ever conceived by humankind, Islamic Sharia law. And what will the Muslims do? They will continue to attack and kill because their mantra doesn't say that they should fight and kill, wiping out all non-Muslims until they secure an autonomous region in Mindanao. It says they should continue to kill all Muslims, all non-Muslims, until the whole world submits to their demonic deity, Allah. The Moro Islamic Liberation Front, the MILF, is an organization that I detailed their behavior for some 20 years along in the Islamic terrorist timeline. If you go to prophetofdoom.net and search there for the Islamic clubs, you will find the MILF there front and center. They are a ruthless and vicious organization, very similar to Abu Shayab, that is also a Filipino Islamic terrorism group. They have for decades fought to set up an independent Islamic state in the southern Philippines, and they have been blamed and have acknowledged having perpetrated scores of attacks that have led tens of thousands dead, according to the article. So what did they get as the reward for killing tens of thousands of people in terrorist attacks? Exactly the thing that they sought. An independent Islamic state in the southern Philippines. Yet even as this violence unfolded, the rebels have been negotiating for over 15 years with the officials from the Manila-based government. Yeah. Kill and negotiate. Kill and negotiate. After you've terrorized people enough, they will capitulate. Aquino has said this agreement brings all the former secessionist groups into the fold and that the Moro Islamic Liberation Front is no longer seeking to form a new nation. No. Why would they seek to form a new nation? You gave them their own. As for the hell, not peace, brought upon the inhabitants of Mindanao as a result of turning their fates over to Sharia law and this Islamic terrorism organization, consider what is now happening in Mali, now that Muslims are imposing Sharia law there. This story is also from CNN. It begins, radical Islamist. We don't need radical before Islamist. These are fundamentalist Muslims. Islamists are compiling a list of unmarried mothers in northern Mali, raising fears of cruel punishments such as stoning, amputations, and executions, a senior United Nations official said. The Islamists controlling most of the north have vowed to impose a stricter form of Islamic law or Sharia. Now, if you're a journalist, wake up. Sharia is not radical Islam. Sharia is fundamentalist Islam. It's Islam as practiced by the first and only Islamic prophet, Muhammad. It is comprised entirely of Muhammad's words and deeds. There is nothing more to Sharia law than Muhammad's words and deeds. It isn't, therefore, radical. It is fundamentalist. It can't be a stricter form of Islamic law. It is the only form of Islamic law. If we continue to be this stupid, then we're going to find that the entire world will be turned over to these idiots. Local radical groups, as this article says, they're not radical groups, they're fundamentalists, they're religious fundamentalists, have said that the law condemns relationships outside of marriage. That, by the way, the United Nations spokesperson will tell you is a smokescreen. They have no interest in relationships outside of marriage. They're actually trying to impose legal prostitution, all under the auspices of Sharia law. The Quran itself authorizes using a captured woman for prostitution. The UN Assistant Secretary General for Human Rights, who just returned from a visit to Mali, said there are reports Islamic groups are compiling lists of women who have had children outside of wedlock or who were unmarried and are pregnant, and that there is a real threat that these individuals will be at risk of cruel and inhuman punishments. We will return to the cruel and inhuman nature of Islam after a moment. To Shattering Myths, we're discovering what happens when Sharia law is imposed upon people, when Islam is introduced into a society in such a way that it controls the fate of those individuals who live there. This individual who is was head of the United Nations Task Force in Mali, Ivan Simonovic, said this week that that this list that is being compiled of unwed mothers indicate that these women are at imminent risk of being subjected to cruel and inhuman punishment. Now, what he has not said, and what the journalist who wrote this article, if we can be so kind to call the author of this article a journalist, is that every one of these cruel and inhuman punishments that are spoken of and that are being perpetrated are all approved by fundamentalist Islam, that the Quran and Hadith and therefore Sharia law all condone what the Muslims are doing. They think that they are doing what their God wants them to do. And in fact, they are. It's just that their God isn't God. In July, Islamists forced a woman into a hole and then stoned her to death for committing adultery as terrified residents quietly watched. And that's really what happens with terrorism. Terror is a very public display of force on a civilian population for the means of getting the rest of the population to capitulate. and so they just stood silently by. This article then says the extremists, they aren't extremists, they're fundamentalists. That's the opposite of a radical, it's the opposite of a of someone who has extreme behavior, is a fundamentalist. They have conducted public executions, amputations, floggings, and other inhuman and degrading punishments. The Quran itself, in the final surah handed down, which would be the fifth, it says that in the 33rd verse, it speaks of amputating an arm and a leg on opposite sides, of crucifying, killing, enslaving, victims who are considered to be making mischief. Now, mischief is defined as anything which is contrary to Muhammad, contrary to jihad, contrary to Allah and Islam, all of which, by the way, are satanic in nature. Anything that is opposed to Satan's agenda is considered making mischief in the land. And so the Quran itself in 533 says, yeah, amputate an arm and a leg on opposite sides. Crucify them. Such is the punishment for those who make mischief in the land. In July, as a result of what's happening, I should say, women and children, according to the United Nations, face the greatest risk. More women in the region are ending up in forced marriages, and with wives costing less than $1,000. You know, you buy a purebred dog today, you're going to be up there in the same range as a woman in Mali. You know, you buy a good horse and you're going to spend 20 times this amount of money. So women are selling for about $1,000. And then when they're sold for less than $1,000, the husbands, mind you, wives and husbands, using wife and husband in what is an economic endeavor, disgusting kind of terminology, the husbands now are reselling the women. The international aid worker said the process is actually a smokescreen for enforced prostitution and rapes occurring throughout the region. You see, the Quran has a limit of four wives for Muslims. So what Muhammad did is he invented this temporary wife status for Muslims. Now, he himself said that he could have any number, and he had some 24 at a time, concubines, wives, and sex slaves. But with what Muhammad did is, with his God's help, is that there could be this temporary marriage in Islam where you could go have sex with a prostitute if you wanted to, and she would be a temporary wife. And then it in the Quran, it says, you know, that sex with your captives is A-OK with Allah. Well, sex with a captive is rape. And then it talks about how these same women in the Quran can be used as prostitutes on behalf of the Islamic men. In other words, that's an economic endeavor where the women are forced to act as sex slaves. And so here is this religious group saying that we're opposed to sex outside of marriage, and that's the reason why we are killing these women, when in fact, under Sharia law, what they're trying to do is legitimize their own prostitution rings, the ability to buy and sell little girls. And that is precisely what they're doing. And, of course, that's all A-OK within the auspices of Sharia. I am Yada. This is Shattering Myths. To Shattering Myths. I am your host, Yada. You can reach us by calling 877-300-7645. Turning back to Mali, the United Nations political rights activist and leader said that civil rights are being severely restricted as a result of the imposition of a strict interpretation of Sharia law. There is no such thing as a strict interpretation of Sharia law. Sharia law is rotten to the core. It is the only form of Islamic law And it is based entirely on Muhammad's life and Muhammad's words. That's nothing more to it than that. There aren't liberal forms and strict forms. There's only one form of Sharia law. And we need to recognize that. And Sharia law is based entirely on Muhammad's life. So Muhammad becomes extraordinarily relevant if you're in a country where people's liberties are being stolen from them, where they're being terrorized, where they are being inhumanly tortured. It's incumbent upon you to do your homework and recognize what Muhammad was like, because this legal system is based on his words and deeds. And come to find out, he was a rapist. He was a pedophile. He was incestuous. He was a mass murderer. He was a ruthless terrorist. He was a liar. He was a kidnapper. He engaged in the slave trade. He was amongst the most repulsive men who ever lived. That means that there's no strict interpretation of Sharia law. Sharia law, by its very nature, is hostile to life and liberty. And he says, because of this, there has been a implementation of a systematic, cruel, and inhuman series of punishments, all of which are being implemented, Simonovic told the Rights Council. The militants are also buying children and enslaving them as soldiers, paying their families some $600. So a child in Mali, in Islam, is worth $600, but only if they can be enslaved and forced to become a jihadist and kill. Now, it's a major incentive for the parents warped by Islam, where half the population lives on a dollar and a quarter a day. Desperation, another consequence of Islam. In addition, the Islamists have also banned smoking, drinking, watching sports on television, and listening to music. So, buying and selling women, buying and selling children, forcing the children to become jihadists, engaging the women, forcing the women that you buy into prostitution, A-OK! With the Islamist imposing Sharia law in Mali. But watching sports on television? No. Smoking and drinking? No. We're banning that stuff. Oh, we got to keep our customers alive. Otherwise, who are we going to prostitute our slaves to? In addition, the Islamists have said that we do not have to answer to anyone over the application of Sharia. This is Alu Tori. He is the Islamist commissioner over Mali. No, we don't have to answer to anyone. It's our religious right to impose Sharia. This is the form of Islam practiced for thousands of years. Actually, no, it isn't practiced for thousands of years. Thousands of years would require more than 2,000. Now, you'd have to be at least at 2,000 or more to have it be thousands of years. But Muslims aren't very good at math. Islam was conceived by Muhammad in the 7th century. It didn't get practiced, and its original, I can't say text, because everything in Islam was hearsay. Nothing was written down in Islam for 200 years after Muhammad invented the religion. But by the time the Hadith and the Quran were actually disseminated in writing, you're dealing with the 9th century. From the 9th century to the 21st century is not thousands of years. But it is true that the form of Islam that is dictated under Sharia has been practiced for a very long time. It is the very core and nature of Islam. Allah in the Quran orders Muslims to follow Muhammad's example and to follow Muhammad's edicts. His example and his edicts are found in the Hadith, which compel Muslims to be terrorists. It is why I say it is impossible to be a good person and a good Muslim. All good Muslims are terrorists. And all you have to do to validate that statement is to shed your ignorance and read the Hadith and Quran. That is exactly what Allah says in the 9th Surah, that a Muslim who does not engage in jihad ceases to be a Muslim. They become a hypocrite, which would be a bad Muslim. And then Allah orders the good Muslim jihadist to kill them so that he can torture the peaceful Muslim hypocrites in the hottest places in hell. The fact of the matter is, to be a good person as a Muslim, you have to be a very bad Muslim. And that's the problem with Islam. Now, Mali, you may be wondering, how did Mali get itself into this fix where Sharia law is being imposed? Well, it plunged into chaos in March after a military ruler overthrew the president, shaking one of West Africa's most stable democracies. The coup leader stepped down in May and transferred power over to a transitional government, but uncertainty continues to loom. Ethnic Tuareg rebels and the Islamic militants took advantage of the chaos to seize the northern portion of the country for themselves. Months later, two groups with ties to Al-Qaeda, not ties to Islam, mind you, toppled the Tuareg movement. The two groups now control two-thirds of northern Mali, an area the size of the whole of France. In its resolution, the United Nations Security Council condemned human rights abuses by extremist groups. They're not extremists, they're fundamentalists. Included hostage-taking, something Mohammed did with reckless abandon. He perpetrated Islam through kidnapping, pillaging. The first stories that emerged from the Hadith when Mohammed fled Mecca in shame and joined some armed men in Yathrib was that they began to pillage. They stole. That's why the 8th surah of the Quran says stealing is lawful and good. Destruction of cultural and religious sites and the recruitment of child soldiers. Mohammed enslaved the children, many of whom he forced to become jihadists. This article continues, jihadists are using the north for drugs and arms trade. Drugs and arms trade are A-OK under Sharia law, but you can't watch sports on television. And they use the arms trade and drugs to train recruits and plan for new attacks to fund their vile regimen. It's unacceptable what the Islamists have done, says Papa Magia, who attended a protest in March. I'm here to say that Mali needs help, and I hope the international community listens. What good would it do? The international community are in lockstep with the Muslims. The international community is unwilling to expose and condemn the vile nature of this religion. And so long as the West continues to advocate ignorance about Islam and tolerance of Islam and actually condones Islam, there is no way that these people will see any relief. The next story turns our attention to Saudi Arabia. Now, Saudi Arabia is not a country. Saudi Arabia is a personal estate. It is a fiefdom. Such is the case with Bahrain, Qatar, the United Arab Emirates, and Kuwait. All of these places are private estates. They're fiefdoms. Well, the Sauds from Saudi Arabia, who are amongst the most repulsive people on earth, said that they were insulted by a parliamentary inquiry in how the UK deals with the country and how it is intervening in Bahrain. The Saudi officials have told the BBC they are now reevaluating their country's historic relations with Britain and that all options will be looked at. You see, all that the parliament did is say, you know, we probably ought to evaluate whether or not the Saudi Arabian behavior in Bahrain and its other actions and interactions with the UK and around the world, whether or not those are in our interests. All they were doing, standard procedure, but Saudi Arabia was insulted. Mind you, Saudi Arabia would not exist as the House of Saud if it were not for the fact that during World War I, the Brits decided that it would be easier to use Sun Tzu's tactic to turn the Wahhabist union with the with Wahhab and Saud against the Muslim Turks, and that if the Muslim Turks, who had attacked Mecca, shelling it with artillery, could be subdued with the help of the Saud warlords in union with Wahhab. You've heard of the Wahhabist form of fundamentalist Islam. Well, it was that union that the UK decided that they would deploy in World War I, promising them their own fiefdom should together they prevail. And they bribed them to go kill their Muslim brothers. And so the very fiefdom that exists in Saudi Arabia would not exist today if it had not been for Britain. Now, the Sunni majority kingdom suspects that the hand of Iran is behind much of the unrest in its own Sharia or Shia population and that of Bahrain. In fact, they're blaming this inquiry on Shia Islam. You know, two forms of Islam, Shia and Sunni, they both are actually fundamentalist. They're both actually the same. The only difference between the two is who's empowered, kind of like the Greek Orthodox Church, the Copt form of Orthodox Christianity and Roman Catholicism. It's just who's enthroned. Well, Saudi Arabia has been long sensitive to Western criticisms of its human rights record because it's deplorable. Women have no rights in Saudi Arabia. There are no rights to practice any religion in Saudi Arabia that isn't Islam. And the only form of Islam that you can practice in Saudi Arabia is Wahhab. It is an extraordinarily dictatorial and oppressive society with no rights of expression or movement. In fact, a woman can't even leave Saudi Arabia. And so, yes, they are sensitive to Western criticisms because they all hit home, including this inquiry, striving to understand what the Saudi Arabians are doing, menacing the rest of the world today. I am Yada. This is Shattering Myths. Back to Shattering Myths. I am your host, Yada. We're considering a tizzy fit that was thrown by the Saudi ambassador to London, who didn't like the fact that the British were conducting a parliamentary investigation, something that Sauds would know nothing of because they run a dictatorship. But the Saudi ambassador in London, nonetheless, Prince Mohammed bin Nawaf Al Saud, told the BBC that his country would not tolerate or accept any foreign interference in the workings of the Gulf Cooperation Council, which comprises Saudi Arabia, Bahrain, Kuwait, Qatar, the United Arab Emirates, and Oman. Except, of course, if it is to give them their fiefdom back after Saddam Hussein invaded. We'll take your assistance for that. If it's to provide them with the weapons that that are needed to sustain their dictatorships, which the United States provides, they'll take our assistance for that. And, of course, to provide the expertise to enrich them via the OPEC cartel, of which they stole all of the refinery facilities and the transportation facilities before they formed OPEC. They'll take that. And, of course, if you were to look at Bahrain, Kuwait, Qatar, the United Arab Emirates, Saudi Arabia, and Oman, one of the things you would find is that the Arabs don't work. No. They pay Westerners, those not poisoned by Islam, to do all of their work. And if you were hired to be a household worker in the House of Saud in Saudi Arabia, be forewarned. The likelihood of you being tortured is extraordinarily high. There's 20 countries around the world that have now made it illegal for Saudi Arabia's royal family to recruit servants from those countries because of the horrors they have perpetrated, where they use nail guns, where they use cattle prods, where they literally torture the servants. This is a disgusting regime. The House of Saud is amongst the most repulsive regimes in all of human history. The The senior Saudi official added, the kingdom will not permit a group of so-called human rights activists supported and funded by foreign entities to implant a new foreign-linked political system in a fellow GCC country. What they're saying now, they've just said that it was Iran that is behind all of this. Now, sure sounds like the mullahs in Iran to me. I mean, nothing says human rights and new like fundamentalist Islam. I mean, come on, folks. Wake up. The Sunni monarchies in both Saudi Arabia and Bahrain suspect Iran of covertly supporting Shia activists that they say are working to turn Bahrain into a Shia-led Islamic state. I guess just as the Sunnis from Saudi Arabia are doing in Syria. But in Syria, it's just fine for us to supply weapons to the Sunni majority in Syria for them to use against the Iranian-allied Shia government, but it's not appropriate for the Shias in Iran to do the same thing with the Shia majority in Bahrain. Can you say hypocrite? At the height of Bahrain's unrest last year, around 1,000 Saudi troops invaded Bahrain, and it was reported by some outlets that they had been used to put down the unrest, the protests against the dictator and his government. But the Saudi Arabian ambassador to London, oh, I deny all of this, saying that as a GCC member, we sent a brigade of specialized units simply to secure and protect critical Bahraini installations and infrastructure. There was no one targeting Bahraini infrastructures. The protesters were all peaceful in Bahrain. They were savaged by their government, a government that the United States enriches with its military bases. And yet, we are supposed to look the other way when these dictators suppress their populations, and yet they want us to supply weapons when the same regime supports the overthrow of Syria. Speaking of Syria, there's a story that we won't get much into today, but I would at least like to begin it. The New York Times is reporting something that I reported 2 years ago, that this was precisely what was going to happen, not only in Syria, but in each of these nations besieged by the Arab Spring, which is an Islamic reformation. Guess where most all of the weapons are going that are being shipped now into Syria? To the very jihadist that America claims to be fighting its war against terrorism. I am Yada. This is Shattering Myths.
Hi, this is Dr. Joel Wallach, the Dead Doctors Don't Lie guy. There are disturbing health facts in the United States. We are now 60th in life expectancy, 41st in infant mortality. Autism is up from 1...